This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Gunnarsson with Kusu Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. Right now, we're paying attention to the Middle East, particularly Saudi Arabia and its role in the oil markets. Just yesterday, OPEC Plus announced a record production cut of nearly 10 million barrels, with some of the other G20 components pledging up to another 10 million, which could see up to a 15 to 20% cut in oil production. And hopefully, this puts an end to the price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia, which broke out just over a month ago, that has contributed to the rock bottom oil prices we've been seeing over the past few weeks. I think, was it last week or the week before, it touched $20.
Yeah, so US President Donald Trump, I guess rightly, he could take credit for some of this, some breakthrough in their negotiations. He played an instrumental figure in the negotiations. I think he was a strong opponent of OPEC, seeing it as a cartel acting against US interests. And apparently what I think moved the needle was the fact when I think Mexico agreed to do some production cuts. And why did they agree? It was because Trump apparently agreed for US to take up some cuts that Mexico was asked to make. So I guess we'll get more insights from Dorsey.
I mean, we can always count on President Donald Trump to step in when the interests align with his own. The shale industry is a big component to the American economy, and they because of that, and they didn't participate in the last cuts, they became the biggest producer in the world. So right now, for more thoughts on how this plays out in the Middle East and for Saudi Arabia, we speak to James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies at the Middle East and the Middle East Institute. James, thank you so much for joining us on the line this morning. Now, briefly, could you help us understand the dynamics involved in the OPEC Plus negotiations? How prevalent was the U.S. role in these talks, and what leverage do you think they used against the parties involved, particularly Saudi Arabia?
Briefly, you have three major parties: Saudi Arabia, Russia, the United States, with very different interests. And in some cases, those interests coincide, but then they have to take other things into consideration. What that means is that Russia has an interest in knocking out the U.S. shale industry because it's competition, and it has turned the United States into the single largest producer and exporter. And of course, that position is all the more important beyond the economics to the United States at a time that it's seeing its influence and prestige, particularly now with the coronavirus and the way it's handling that, decline. The Saudis and the Russians have a further interest in knocking out the U.S. shale industry. And U.S. shale, keep in mind, accounts for about 10 million jobs in the U.S., which now more than ever, of course, preservation of those jobs is important. But the greater interest that the Saudis and the Russians share is the fact that the energy market, oil and gas, is changing, particularly oil. And if you look over a period of the next 2 to 3 decades, oil as an asset value is declining. It's declining in its value because of shale, because of renewables. So it's now important for countries like Saudi Arabia and Russia to gather as much market share as they can, and they try to do that in what was a price war. Now, Trump has stepped in. The Saudis have to balance, much more than the Russians, the fact that they have their relationship at this point with the United States is fundamental to their security. And therefore, with U.S. anger, you already had a situation in Washington where it was the White House that was defending the Saudis. And over the last 2 years, because of a whole range of incidents, including the killing of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi, relations with the Congress were deteriorating rapidly. So in this configuration, the Saudis clearly decided that this was not the right moment to wage that war. It doesn't mean that the war is over. What it means is that you have a timeout.
And how long will this timeout be?
Hard to say. And the reason it's hard to say is because we don't know how long it will take to get the coronavirus under control and the pandemic under control. And how then economic recovery across the globe is going to play out. So it's very difficult to predict when this will all erupt again. I think, though, that there's no question that at some point it will erupt.
Yeah, Tom, James, where it comes to global influence, obviously the oil impasse has been kind of like a proxy to the powers that be, the Saudis, the Russians, and the Americans. Post May 1st, when these cuts are supposedly meant to take place, how do you think the rest of the year will unfold in terms of these tectonic shifts within the global power sphere?
Well, I think that, first of all, we'll have to see how this all works out. Obviously, this is a year in which, one, economic recovery is going to be slow and managed and could be very painful. That's true as much for the Russians and the Saudis as it's true for the Americans. Also, of course, we have a U.S. election in November, and we don't know how that what the result of that is going to be. Now, even if Joe Biden were to win that election, I think what we will get is more rationality in U.S. policy, probably greater predictability and less of a narcissistic tone, if you wish. But it's not going to be a simple return to the status ante quo, with other words, a return to where we were pre-Trump. Things have changed in the United States.
So, James, one player that has not received that much scrutiny is the United Arab Emirates. They've also ramped up their production along with Saudi Arabia. How are they positioning themselves in and amongst all these, the big three oil players?
Well, the UAE has been very good at flying under the radar. And the question is, how long? The fact that the UAE, immediately after the Saudis declared that they were going to raise oil production significantly in a bid to drive prices down and achieve market share, the UAE immediately after that said it would do the same thing. In terms of, that is the tip of the iceberg, if you wish, in terms of policy, a policy divergence between the United States and the UAE. If you look at the UAE, in contrast to Saudi Arabia, has over the last year sought to reduce tensions with Iran because it is afraid that if there were to be a all-out war with Iran and the United States, then it could become a battlefield. So you saw after the attack on the oil tankers off the coast of the UAE last May, June, the UAE reaching out to Iran by sending a Coast Guard delegation to Iran to discuss maritime security. With the coronavirus country, the UAE was one of the first countries, in contrast to the UAE, to the US, which has refused to ease sanctions on Iran so that it could cope with the pandemic. The UAE sent aid shipments to Iran. And so that, if indeed Trump pushes ahead with his Iran hardline towards Iran policy, in effect constitutes a divergence in views and a divergence of interests that at some point is going to come to the foreground.
All right, James, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. That was James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. And really highlighting that the basically, whenever it comes to a mutual interest, you can expect the big three or any of the powers that be. Or was it that you used just now, Chuang, the power sphere to come together in their mutual interests?
The power, the global narrative, you know, the diaphragm there. but look, I mean, you know what I got from this discussion, right? It's the fact that these basically schoolyard bullies are fighting over a prize which is getting smaller and smaller in value every single year, okay? Because obviously with U.S. shale in the picture, oil is no longer the diamond it once was in the past, and the price just keeps on dropping. And then you add the renewable revolution, the renewable energy revolution. And in 10 years' time, oil could be a real commodity in the truest sense of the definition. Where does that leave Malaysia? Not good, right? Because obviously the oil revenue is a big part of our OPEX.
Yeah, so countries who are really highly dependent on oil really have to relook at their economic model. But here is the thing you mentioned about smallness. I think it takes a virus, right, to just tell us how small we are.
Yes, and oil, obviously, one of the reasons here, President Trump, the tariff man struck a little bit. He was threatening tariffs to get this deal through, again, to prop up the shale industry, which has been hit hard, especially with oil at such low levels. Now, right now, we're going into a few messes, and when we come back, Enterprise will be taking over the show after this. That will be happening after the 10 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.